You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
This is where Wisconsin wakes up. It's Daybreak with Brian Noonan and Jamie Martinson. Here are your hosts, Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. It is 6 minutes after six now. I am Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie, we're going to have a great show today. You know how I know that?
How is that?
I spoke to a former president. I'm not at liberty to say which one.
Okay.
And they said they wished they had the courage to do the show that we're about to do. So,
well, you know,
I'm buoyed. Don't investigate it. Just take me at face value.
Right.
Don't look into it.
Well, that's
it,
what we should be doing. Absolutely. Just take everything
at
face value.
Just believe what I said.
That's right. Before we jump into news headlines and all of the politics of the day, I do want to mention that there is some light snow falling across areas of Wisconsin this morning. And obviously, the temperatures are going to be a little warmer today than they were yesterday. So we had some melting overnight. So roads are wet. We've got a little snowfall coming down this morning. So as you can imagine, there's some very slick spots even in the cities this morning. Oh. So if you are out on the roads this morning, just please be aware of that. Watch the conditions. It's nothing like we saw earlier this week, but, you know, just because we like people to get where they need to be safely in the morning. So that's all.
That is true.
Yeah.
Are you speaking from experience? Did you have a little slip and slide?
No, I didn't, but I saw a couple people who did, and I realized very quickly that coming up to stoplights quickly was not the way to go this morning, that I should probably start breaking a little ways back. So,
there's nothing worse than ice. I don't care how much snow falls. It's the ice. So, Jamie is correct. Not that we shouldn't need to tell you, but we will.
Well, here's the thing. After the blizzard, the generational blizzard that we had throughout the state, you know, a lot of people are going to get up this morning. They'll be like, hey, everything's cleared out. They're going to head outside. They're not even going to think about the fact that we had a little light snowfall. And it turns out that it's just a wee bit slick in spots. So we just want to make sure you get where you need to be safely. And you're aware of the conditions that we've had in these wee early morning hours before most people are awake. But not us, because we know what the roads are like, Parker, because we already did it.
We did. Yeah. Yes. There was same thing. I kind of went, oh, we're good. Okay. It's at that first stoplight. So
just be careful.
Well, I'm
out
glad
there
you both made it safely and everybody else drive safely. That was, this is not the time. I'm happy I'm not out driving around right now.
Exactly. I'd kill for your commute, Brian. Man, going upstairs.
Don't say it out loud. That's why I don't mention it. I don't mention it. I don't want everybody to wise up. So we're just going to keep things status quo.
That's right.
Unlike the Middle East, where the war still rages on, and as we've done every morning since this conflict, war, military action has begun, we like to give you some headlines from the region and tell you what's happening over there. Well, overnight, Israel targeted Iran's intelligence minister in an overnight strike in Tehran. According to an Israeli official, a day after killing the country's security chief, Iran has vowed revenge for the killing, and they're not happy, as you can imagine. And I don't. When Iran says they're vowing vengeance,
right?
I'm pretty sure it's coming.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like there's just a bit of escalation in every day when we do these headlines, or if you pay attention to what's happening, it feels like there's just a little bit more escalation into what's happening between the two countries and the targets that we're hearing about day in and day out. So it feels like the escalation is slow but sure, no matter what the president of the United States says.
Well, that's just it. We're not hearing as much. As we've done these, it went from a lot of U.S.-involved headlines the first week, a few more the second week. Now it's basically coming down, and it's day by day, obviously, but it's coming down to a lot of Israel-Iran, mm-hmm. which is how it should have been. We shouldn't be in this. These are the two people or two countries who should be involved in this. We shouldn't have ever been involved.
Well, it turns out we found out yesterday that is probably accurate with the resignation of somebody pretty important to this administration, which we'll talk about in more depth later this morning.
Yep.
In other headlines, two people were killed in Israel as the country said it was intercepting Iranian missiles earlier today at various cities, including Tel Aviv. Now, CNN witnessed what appeared to be a cluster munition over central Israel. Meanwhile, the U.S. dropped 5,000-pound guided bombs on missile sites along the Hormuz Strait. Wow.
I guess because we have to go it alone. A U.S. warship believed to be carrying Marines and sailors to the Middle East was nearing the Malacca Strait off Singapore as it made its way to the region. Maritime tracking, data showed that yesterday that the ship was on its way. So another not good sign.
And we had talked about that late last week, whether or not there was going to ever be boots on the ground. The president was pretty dismissive of it, wouldn't really give his any strategy when asked by reporters. And
Give what you don't have.
Right. This is true as well. And then finally, in these news headlines this morning, Iranian foreign minister and Iranian attacks on urban areas in neighboring countries are, quote, not our fault, they say, because the United States moved its forces out of military bases and into hotels in those cities. I mean, it just keeps compounding, right? And no matter how you look at it, it's not good for military already in the region, and it's definitely not good for the civilians who are just innocent bystanders in their government's actions. And I think that's the unfortunate part. Thousands have been killed in these attacks already. And we're two and a half weeks in at this point.
Two and a half. And I keep going back to this, and I know most of us do, the question of why are we there?
Yeah.
And the answer of I felt in my gut that they were going to attack us is not, that's not valid. It's not a concrete reason to drag your country into a war that we had no business starting. We have to clarify for the people who go, oh, then you were for that regime doing no, you don't have to be for the regime to say we shouldn't be over in this war. That's weak arguments, and we entertain a lot of things, but weak sauce. I don't like weak sauce. I like my sauce rich.
I do.
Full of it, full of flavor and ingredients.
And in this case, information and strategy.
Those are important ingredients. Yes, those are very important ingredients. It's been a while since we've heard anything from the post office.
You know,
there was talk in Trump's first term of privatizing it. The post office operates. It's still amazing how the post office operates. I'm sorry. The fact that I can wander down, see a blue box, put something in it, and somebody on the other side of the world will get it.
I know, it is crazy.
This is magic, right? There's no earthly way that this happens. Is there a transporter in there for Star Wars or Star Trek? I don't know. Well, now the post office is making headlines again because they say they could run out of money within a year if nothing changes.
This is actually, you know, when you think about the fact, though, that that Wisconsin is such a rural state, this is where my mind goes automatically, because this is such a rural state. So the Postal Service isn't just optional for a lot of people. It's pretty essential, considering there's a lot of people in this country and in this state, including some of my own family members, that rely on the mail for things like prescriptions and medical supplies. So if deliveries slow down or they stop, it's not just inconvenient. That's dangerous for a lot of people, because you got to think about the ones who don't have healthcare facilities just close by to run to the pharmacy or to get what they need. So, I mean, when we talk about these things, I think this is something we all need to take seriously, because this would mean not being able to pay workers or vendors and disrupting the mail delivery. So the United States Postal Service, very unique government agency, because it doesn't actually rely on any tax dollars. It runs on stamps and service fees. So as you can imagine, in a world where everything is online, Brian, you alluded to it.
It doesn't seem like that's a good business model. Well, we're going to just sell stamps. Really?
Right.
Okay. That's a lot of stamps to keep
a
national organization moving.
And
but
so many of us do everything online now, where we aren't going in to purchase stamps and we don't have to mail, and even documents a lot of times now you can do your signature online
and sign and just
it's crazy. So the problem is that with fewer people using the actual mail service, especially first-class mail, we've run into a bit of a conundrum at the United States Postal Service to the tune of, you know, about $9 billion in losses in just 2025, and that's after losing money for 4 years. They recently posted another $1.3 billion quarterly loss, and the costs keep rising, as you can imagine. Sure. It is for everybody. You've got employee benefits. You've got retiree health care. You've got day-to-day operations. And so essentially at this point, we're learning that the agency has stayed afloat simply by borrowing money from the U.S. Treasury and delaying some of their payments. But it now has it has a hit because it's hit its borrowing limit of $15 billion and it can't take on any more debt, which is insanity when you think about it, isn't it?
Yes, that a government agency is that far in debt because they don't get funded by I know that's the argument. That's where privatization comes in. And I've thought about this a lot. I'm like, well, we fund a lot of different things,
right?
As a government, is it worth it? And I think based on your valid points at the beginning that this country is not just urban areas.
Right.
You've got a lot of people living in a lot of places, and they do need postal service delivery for whatever you name it, important stuff. Now I know some of us, myself included, go to the mailbox every day, and it's like, oh, there's nothing in here but junk. And I unload my mom's mailbox, and it's nothing but solicitations for money. Now the post office is making money off of all of that.
Thank goodness, because can you imagine what these numbers would be without all of that? My goodness.
No, and if you are, like for you and I, if we don't need that stuff, it's okay. If it goes away, it's not going to bother me. But then people do need it, like you said.
Right.
And so I think it's a vital service. I still don't think privatization is the best route.
No.
However, I can see the argument for it, but I'd need some more. I need some more numbers.
Agreed. And I think the thing that would scare me is the people who would be most apt to dive in to want to privatize the post office. I mean, we've already heard rumblings of Elon Musk wanting to be more involved through Amazon delivery. Jeff Bezos being involved a little bit more. Elon Musk was also, through Doge, diving into, you know, the wasteful spending of the United States post office. Obviously, I don't know where, you know, I don't know where you were looking, because there is obviously no wasteful spending. But there are some solutions that are being discussed right now. Raising the debt limit, allowing higher postage prices, which I don't know how that's going to help because people already complain about it. And then, of course, changing the retirement benefits for some of the former employees. Do you remember when that used to be the gig you got?
Yes, it was a line in one of Robert Townsend's movies. There's always work at the post office, because that was a stable gig. If you got in at the post office, you were set. I don't know how, I mean, going forward, you could change the benefits in the retirement plan. I don't know.
You can't
retrograde the legality of changing it for the people who are retired. You can't just go, well, you know, we're changing the rules now.
But I think this is going to be something to keep an eye on because, not only is it rural areas, but think of the military families overseas that rely on the postal service to get things shipped to them. And there's a lot of impacts of not having the postal service, even if we feel like it's archaic and a little outdated sometimes. Snail mail and all that. It is 6:19 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Governor Evers vetoed a tax credit bill. He says it's too broad. Which one? How broad is it? We'll find out on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
6:22 right now. We hope that your morning is going well so far. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, Brian, don't forget that we've got another chance for everybody to qualify for some really great cash and prizes coming up in less than an hour with our multi-state text-to-win contest. This is the portion of the morning where we remind you to get your Civic Media app downloaded in case you don't already have it, because that's the only way that you can qualify for a daily prize of $200 or that grand prize, which is that Verlo Queen mattress set over $1,300 value, so not bad.
Right, you get the sheets, you get the mattress pad, you get some pillows,
you
get the whole deal, and we've already given away 2 days worth of cash. So strap in, we're doing this for 2 weeks, so should be fun, and then the grand prize winner will be announced.
Plenty of chances to qualify throughout each and every day, and the beauty of it is you can enter every single time you want throughout the day using your Civic Media.
Oh, is that
media.
Right?
You can, yeah, you we can, have no limits on how many times you can enter. So I noticed yesterday there were a couple people who actually entered the same hour twice or three times.
I noticed that too, and I wondered if that was legit.
No, yes, that's totally legit.
It's like a Chicago election. Vote early, vote often. Come on in, and we'll, you know,
absolutely.
Good luck.
Absolutely.
Good luck to you. The more, listen, if you're just sitting around all day and you have access to your phone and your app, just listen for, because the word changes throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And listen for the new word, enter up, and there you go.
I love it.
So this is another, please, we must always read past the headlines. If you take nothing away from this show, it's read past the headline. The headline, Governor Evers vetoes a bill that would extend tax credits for child care, for businesses dealing with child care. And you're like, ooh, why would he do something that evil? And then you go, oh, wait a minute. I'm going to read the second paragraph.
Damn that Tony Evers. Yeah, it turns out you got to read a little bit.
Well, I got to side with the governor on this, because forever we've always talked about pork being jammed into all these bills, right? Oh, there's always something that tries to get snuck in. And so the governor looked at this bill. It was a catch-all rule that would allow businesses to claim tax credits for just about any expense tied to child care. And the governor said, hold on, that seems a little broad to me, and it could lead to a lot of fraud and abuse, which we know never happens with government funding. Everybody's above board, straight up. So we vetoed it.
Just go talk to Tim Walz if you want to know how that works out in Minnesota.
Maybe Tony called Tim. Listen, what's going on? I know you're having a little trouble with that daycare stuff. What do you think of this one?
Right.
Oh, no. And Walz is just like, no, save yourself the headache.
I always want to know how many of those conversations happen in private, honestly.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, but I think this is an interesting case, though, because another issue with this particular bill is it didn't actually include any funding for the actual oversight either. So the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, or WEDC, would be responsible for monitoring it without any extra resources. And the proposal came as the state is, as a lot of families know, already dealing with a child care crisis, right?
Yes.
There is rising costs for the families. Providers are struggling to stay open, trying to accommodate the rules, the regulations, all of the increases that they're going through. There's also limited access to really great facilities across the state. And the ones that do have, if you do happen to find a really great center, I know there's also a lot of people who end up on a really long waiting list because of problems with access. The governor had previously supported a more targeted change when it came to child care, allowing businesses to invest in third-party child care programs or even loan funds. He called that approach more strategic and responsible. The original tax credit, which goes back to 2023, covered 15% of child care facility investments, had no businesses actually take advantage of it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is kind of crazy, right? Child care providers criticize.
Yeah, but not really. I mean, we're talking about existing companies, right? Not people going into the child care business.
Right.
But if, say, Civic Media wanted to open a daycare center, just for Parker and the other young technical producers, so they could have juice boxes and roll around.
Graham cracker breaks and stuff.
I would love some juice boxes.
And nap time, yes.
Oh, nap time.
And then we'd have to hire a comely young daycare worker to take care of the boys and swaddle them when they're crying.
Then we've invented something completely different in whatever is happening.
But either way, nobody's taking advantage of that. We could get 15% for the investment.
Right.
But nobody's taking them up on that, which I understand. It's a hassle because as a business, you're taking on not only the cost involved, but another liability.
Yep.
And I understand its benefits to the employees 100%.
Right.
Because then you can always squeeze a couple more minutes out of your employees because they don't have to leave because they know, pickup is only a couple steps away instead of across town and I've got to get, you know, the car. So
You also have to have the space. You know, you have to have the space. You have to accommodate if it is a childcare facility. There's lots of rules and regulations that you have to adhere to through the state.
Yes.
So I do
and
understand.
15% still leaves. Let me do the
a
math.
Big gap.
85%.
Yeah.
That you have to pay yourself.
A big gap. Let's put it like that. But
big gap.
In this particular case, childcare providers criticized this bill that the governor vetoed, saying it wouldn't solve any real issues like costs or staffing shortages. And, you know, if you're wondering how it even made it to the governor's desk with all of this pushback, it passed mostly along party lines. Republicans support it. Democrats opposed it, most of them anyway. And Eva says this bill really just tried to expand too much too quickly without any safeguards. So he wants a more focused, funded solution that actually addresses the child care crisis that we have in this particular state. I mean, no matter how you look at it, our entire system, and I think this it doesn't just apply to Wisconsin, but I think a lot of states across the board need a completely revamped system of how we do child care, right?
Yes.
It's got to be better for families, and it's got to be better for the child care providers. There has to be some win-win in there somewhere, right?
I want my child care providers to be able to live on their wage so they're a little happier coming to work instead of working for minimum wage.
Which is a whole different topic.
For the love of the game. Whole different topic. We got to go. This is Daybreak. It's the Civic Media Network. There you go.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. If you're listening in Madison on WMDX or in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS or in Wausau on WXCO, thank you so much for joining us. And of course, if you want to be part of the conversation this morning, we would love to have you join in. All you have to do is call or text us 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. And remember, about less than a half hour now you get another chance to qualify in the Break Into Spring Text to Win multi-state contest, daily cash prizes, and even a grand prize that we'll be giving away, including a queen mattress set. So be ready for the word at around 7:06 this morning. That's how you hype it.
That is. We're giving you a new word. Get ready to text to win. Multi-state, if you're in Minnesota, we don't care. If you're in Utah, you're listening on the app already, so God bless you. We'd love to have you.
That's right.
But yes, everybody get your app ready, and after 7 o'clock, we'll give you the first word of the day, and it's going to be good. Donald Trump is looking. He loves going south. He loves going down to Mar-a-Lago. And he set his sights about 90 miles south of there. And he is eyeing Cuba. Not for a vacation, but because the president is musing. He's mulling the possibility of, quote, taking Cuba. We're already embroiled in a military war conflict. Excursion. He called it an excursion. So he wants to take another excursion to Cuba. He said we could potentially take them in some form, saying it could mean freeing it or taking control, and added he feels he could do anything when it comes to the island. Boy, talk about at what point what's the point of having a 25th Amendment if we're not going to use it when someone is clearly out of touch with reality? I'm just going to take the island. I can do whatever I want. Just like this deal in Iran. I'm going to go over there because I have a feeling, just a feeling. Don't ask me for facts. I'm going to go over there, and then I'm going to cry and pout when nobody wants to get involved and clean up my mess. This guy is out of control. What do you mean take Cuba? in some form.
What I think is more fascinating is when he made all of these comments, his entire cabinet was there and present, and they seemingly, if you watch what was happening in the Oval Office, they seemingly agree with him outwardly. Now, whether or not they might disagree, internally, we wouldn't want to disagree with the president, though, either. So I understand, you know, why they would nod and bob their heads along with him while he's talking. But it was a fascinating press conference yesterday.
Yeah.
And when he was pressed on whether, we're talking military action here, he declined to give any sort of specifics. Not out of the norm of this president, leaving uncertainty about what kind of involvement he is considering. This is cut one, please.
I think Cuba, I don't know, in its own way, tourism and everything else, it's a beautiful island, great weather. When will the United States do it? I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good. That's a big honor.
Taking Cuba
in some form, yeah. Taking Cuba. I mean, whether I free it, take it, I think I could do anything I want with it. You want to know the truth? They're a very weakened nation right now. They were for a long time.
Wow.
This is, I was going to say unbelievable, but it's not unbelievable for this guy to be saying that kind of thing. But the fact that the United States is in a position where now we're just going to take over countries. We did it in Venezuela. We're trying to do it in Iran. We're talking about Cuba, who, Cuba's Cuba. They've been doing their thing.
Go back to the Cold War.
We don't have missiles there anymore. Yeah, they're sorting it all out. What he sees is a real estate opportunity.
Yeah.
And he doesn't care how he gets it. And I'm sure he's got, his little money people in his ear. Oh, Mr. President, sir, you're the greatest. You know, if we took Cuba, we could make the beaches are gorgeous, the island resorts, the ecotourism, all of that. We'd clean it all up and we'd take it. We could just take it. We have to stop this guy. This is insanity. Once again, to look at another country, and I know the people in Cuba are suffering under this communist
rule. They have for decades.
Right. They have for decades, and it doesn't affect us.
Right.
It's not our business. They're close to us, yes. For a while, we were loosening the embargoes, so you could maybe help them with a little income. That's great. Why? Stop. We see what you're doing. We know why you're interested. Just like Greenland. Whatever happened to Greenland, Jamie? Do we have Greenland yet? Can I
go
there?
That apparently we're still negotiating that one. I don't know because when you look at this crazy timeline that we're in, I mean, Greenland was literally a month ago. About a month to 6 weeks ago, right? 4 to 6 weeks ago is when we were discussing Greenland, we were ramping up all these military actions when they were in Davos in Switzerland, and he was making threats towards the country. So we're not that far removed from that. And think about the timeline that we're in. We've gone from that. Then we've gone into Iran, which is literally only 2.5 weeks into this conflict. And now in the Oval Office yesterday, he started threatening yet another country. And I think, this is one of those things where Cuba is a situation that nobody has fully understood. Presidents for decades have been trying, with much more experienced administrations, have been trying to get into Cuba and figure it out to help the citizens of Cuba against this communist government. And they have failed. So I'm trying to figure out what makes this administration think that their way is going to be the best way unless it involves some sort of force, which is the part that I think should scare all of us, considering the conflict that is already happening in the Middle East that this country has been dragged into and has dragged multiple countries in and keeps trying to drag more into.
The reason this administration thinks they can do it is because they have the really dangerous combination of stupidity and confidence. He believes he is right. He believes he knows best. And because no one has ever said no, he is empowered to believe that. And when you are inept and overly confident, it is a dangerous recipe, and we're seeing the results of it every day in this country. We're seeing, and again, how can you prove him? He's not being proven wrong because he gets away with everything.
Right.
There's no checks and balances. There's nobody to stand up to him. When people do stand up to him, they're gone. When they differ in any way, they're gone. To the point, the purest example of that is these idiots wearing shoes that don't fit. It's so simple and so dumb that you would go, okay, I'm so afraid of this man that I'm going to wear shoes that don't fit me because he gifted them to me. Right there, you go, we're lost. We're done.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And all of this basically stems from Cuba's major nationwide blackout that they experienced. Their electrical grid collapsed over the last few days, and officials there said that there was no clear mechanical failures at the time, and restoration's been slow, which is pretty typical for an outage of this particular size. Now, Cuba has been dealing, though, with these repeated power outages for years because of the aging energy system and lack of investment. The situation has worsened because the country relies so heavily on imported oil to generate their electricity, though. And U.S. policy has played a major role by restricting these oil shipments, particularly, here's ties that bind, from Venezuela. Remember what happened to Venezuela just a few weeks ago as well? That's also part of the timeline of all of this.
Well, I know we did stop all the drug boats that were coming out of there. And we're getting oil.
Yes.
So that's
sure.
Win-win, Jamie. I don't know wherever you're going with
silly
this.
Silly me.
Tread lightly.
Silly me.
Tread lightly.
The U.S. has also pressured other countries not to export oil to Cuba, which also tightens their supply. Their president, Miguel Díaz-Canel, has said that no oil has been delivered to the island in the past 3 months. So the shortage has forced the government to ration fuel and cut back on several of their services, which, as you can imagine, impacts your everyday life because it's so severe and widespread. I mean, think about the blizzard that took out power here. You know, it's kind of the same concept, just, you know, different weather reasons. Trash collection is slowed. It's been stopped in some areas. It's led to a buildup in neighborhoods. The government has had to take in Cuba emergency measures, which is they've reduced school hours, they've postponed major events, they've limited fuel sales to only certain groups like tourists and diplomats. And fuel prices on the unofficial market have also skyrocketed. Gas can cost up to $9 per liter in Cuba. So filling a car can cost more than $300, which exceeds the yearly income for a lot of Cubans. So this just feels, if this is what's happening, right, this is the same type of cruelty and inhumanity that we talk about. And again, I fully understand, because history would tell me so, and studying about it would tell me so, that I understand what this Cuban government is like. There are still people who are there,
right,
who are under the same communist government and are feeling the effects of what this feels like cruelty to me. And I understand.
It is, but once again, it's in our hemisphere. We should control everything on this side of the globe. And it doesn't matter that those people are doing it. This is when you cut off for no reason, when you cut off another country's oil supply and convince people not to give it to them, you don't care about anything but tumbling that country.
Yeah.
And you want to bring it down so you can swoop in and be the hero. So once again, he is creating a problem over and above the communist rule of Cuba, which again has not been an issue for us.
Right.
Cuba doesn't affect us.
Right.
It's right there.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if it was open so you could go and visit and spend some money there and the Cuban people could
sure
have a nice life, or a nicer life. But we see this. We see the goal. The goal is to topple Cuba so you can swoop in. You create the problem, you solve the problem, but there is no problem in Cuba.
No.
That we need to be involved in.
Right.
Let them get their oil deliveries. What does it matter?
And as of right now, tourism, which, as you can imagine, is a major part of the economy, is also being hit. Airlines are canceled or paused flights. And the Cuban officials are blaming U.S. sanctions and restrictions for this crisis, saying that they're harming the citizens, just as we're talking about.
Yes.
Now, Secretary of State Marco Rubio argues that Cuba's leadership is to blame and says the country needs political change. This is cut two, please.
Cuba has an economy that doesn't work and a political and governmental system that can't fix it. So they have to change dramatically. What they announced yesterday is not dramatic enough. It's not going to fix it. So they've got some big decisions to make over there.
But Secretary Rubio, do you support, and I know this is up to Congress, but do you support easing the trade embargo if you get more cooperation from Havana?
Well, I'm not going to discuss what we would talk about or not. Suffice it to say that the embargo is tied to political change on the island. The embargo is codified. But the bottom line is their economy doesn't work. It's a non-functional economy. It's an economy that has survived. That revolution, it's not even a revolution, that thing they have, has survived on subsidies from the Soviet Union and now from Venezuela. They don't get subsidies anymore, so they're in a lot of trouble. And the people in charge, they don't know how to fix it. And so they have to get new people in charge.
Just like here? People in charge don't know how to fix it?
Well, you know, it's easy to point out the flaws somewhere else when, you know, you're surrounded in a room by other people who don't know how to do their jobs.
Who knows? We're going to take over somewhere else. Nicer weather than Greenland, so I'm down, I guess. Who knows? Hey, snowmobilers having some good news up in the North Woods. We'll cheer things up for a couple minutes after this. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson at 6:48. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
6:52 right now. We hope that your morning is going well so far. Thank you so much for joining us. Another little quick reminder that some light snowfall in parts of the state this morning. So please be careful as you're heading out to work or school. There were some wet roads and then a little snowfall made a few slick conditions. So we just want everybody to get where they need to go this morning safely is the moral of the story.
Exactly. And I still, as I watched last night, and I was seeing the totals from around the state. It's still incomprehensible to me. 30 inches of snow one place, 31 inches somewhere else. Like, oh, my God. But if you're in the North Woods, you're probably like, because snowmobilers are getting another chance after this historic late season blizzard. All the counties up there, Oneida, Villas, Ashland, Bayfield, all the counties, Eau Claire up there in the North Woods, are very excited because the snowmobilers can come out for a few more rides before the end of the season, and that means much more money for the local economies.
Yes.
So, yeah, that snow is a hassle, but if you're trying to get out to nature and that's what you do is snowmobile or do outdoor snow sports, man, you're happy, happy.
Oh, you have to be because this is, you know, I'm not one of those people. Like, I want to be inside where it's toasty, roasty, warm. I don't like to strap a couple toothpicks to my feet and hope that I make it down a hill safely. It's just not. I've tried it. It didn't go well, which is
why. Maybe you should use skis instead.
Maybe. But I have a lot of friends who get so disappointed this time of year because they know that their time outside skiing and snowmobiling is coming to an end. And I just remember last week talking about the impending winter weather that we had John from Oshkosh was so disappointed that he'd already put his snowmobile away for the year. So maybe he got it out of storage. Maybe.
I hope so.
Because snowmobiling needs about 6 to 8 inches of base snow. So obviously those conditions can disappear pretty quickly when the temperatures get warmer like they're supposed to over the weekend.
Right, but not when you have 30 inches.
Right? It's going to be a little bit, right? And the temperatures are going to be near the 50 degrees in northern portions of the state over the weekend. So your window's not going to last long, but a lot of riders currently rushing to take advantage of the fresh snow while they can. Some had already put their sleds away for the season. John, get it back out. They're bringing them back out for a final ride. In fact, some counties, and especially in Vilas County, known as the snowmobiling capital of the world, they're seeing some good traffic despite the late timing. Some trails had just reopened after being closed due to earlier warm weather. And obviously, this shows that conditions can change pretty quickly. And if you're a rider, I don't know. My dad had a motorcycle. He never put anything away until the first snowfall.
I was going to say, snowmobiles, I would wait till Easter usually to put it away. And snowmobiling seems like I have a trigger for snowmobile. When I was a kid, we went to, I don't even know if it's still there. It was a little ski resort in Michigan, Chanticleer. And we decided my dad was going to rent a snowmobile. And they had, you could put a little like carriage on the back.
Yep.
So my mom and three of us at the time were sitting in the back, and my dad was driving the snowmobile. And my dad had never driven a snowmobile before. So he took us out to what ended up being the middle of the lake. And got us stuck, and they had to send rescue vehicles to get us off the lake. So I'm a little triggered, and then I always worry. And thank God we haven't heard. I don't think any of these stories this winter of snowmobilers getting decapitated. And I'm not laughing about that. It's a horrible, horrible thing, and that's kind of why I'm like, I'm hesitant. I would love to go that fast. I think it'd be the greatest, but I have two things that are keeping me from wanting to snowmobile.
Sitting
in the bar afterwards with all the people would be fantastic.
That's super fun. And I will say, I haven't done a lot of snowmobiling. We did have one when I was growing up for a short time. So I remember, you know, just being out with my dad. I was so little, though. It was one of those things where he would put me in the front with my little helmet on, and then I would sit between his legs, and off we'd go. So I'm sure he didn't go very fast with me there. But, you know, it was enough of a thrill.
I was going to say, when you're that little,
everything's
fast,
a thrill, right? Somebody swinging you around in the air is exciting. But riders right now, though, are being warned, if this is an area you want to go check out because you are a snowmobiler, there are some hazards. Fallen trees, branches from the recent blizzard are on these trails. And there's also some weak spots in low-lying areas and some of the lake crossings. Now, officials say these trails, if you're going to go out, remember, are in rough late-season conditions. So they're still rideable, but conditions can change fast depending on the temperatures. And for a lot of snowmobilers, they're just seeing this, Brian, as some sort of opportunity. Not everyone braves going out this late, but those who do, this is a chance to squeeze in one last ride. And honestly, if you want to check out what's going on with trails around the state, travelwisconsin.com has a great snow report that you can check out all across the state. That's for skiing, that's for snowshoeing. They give you a little bit of information for all of those winter reports and all those winter sports. So go check that out and be safe if you're going to be out there on a snowmobile.
Please, please don't bring my fears to life. Just go out and have a good time. I don't know. It's like the days when, like, for snowmobilers, I equate it to last week for the one day where it gets really warm and suddenly everybody's got their motorcycle out. It's like, I get to finally ride. And you're out. And then the next day, you're like, oh, my God, I shouldn't have packed the snowmobile away.
Yeah.
You don't pack it away.
Right.
You get it ready. You summarize it. But
my dad would get antsy on those days because he did have a Harley, had a sidecar on it. I grew up, riding with my parents. My little
biker
helmet. I had the T-shirts and everything. But my dad always got antsy on those first nice days, but he was smart enough to know, and a longtime South Dakota resident, that, as we've referred to, fake spring. So, you know, he'd get a little antsy. He'd watch all of his buddies go out, and he'd be like, nah, you're going to have that back in the garage in like a day. And sure enough, he was usually right.
And probably in South Dakota, it could have changed within a couple hours.
Oh, yeah. You could, like, be out on a ride.
It's beautiful, and then you're down the road, and uh-oh,
that's right.
What happened here?
You could have some snow falling on you. It's 6:59 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. The new text to win word revealed.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.